Independent Senator David Pocock held the government's feet to the fire recently and managed to get a new advisory body enshrined in their industrial relations bill to assess whether welfare payments are high enough. Will it be enough, though, to change the political resistance to raising the rate? It wouldn't be the first body to advise on this, after all. If you're receiving welfare payments or just have general thoughts on this, get in touch with us today on Life Matters. I'd love to know what you think about how we move forward as a nation when it comes to supporting people who need a bit of extra help. We're in a very high debt situation, and yet we do keep hearing stories about how hard life is on welfare. How do we balance those drives in Australia? Peter Whiteford is a professor in the Crawford School of Public Policy at the Australian National University in Canberra. Great to have you with us on the program. And Jeremy Poxon is a welfare advocate, board member and spokesperson for the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. Good to have you back with us, Jeremy.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Pleasure. Now, how do the Australian Unemployed Workers Union and your members feel about this change? Is it a welcome move?
No, it's not incredibly welcome. And we're quite critical and cynical of the establishment of, as your intro alluded to, yet another committee. You know, we've had committees on this year after year already. You know, government has been told year after year that the rate of welfare is criminally low. They've often admitted now publicly that nobody can live on $48 a day. So they know this. There's no new evidence or there's no new stories that we can give them. Our members have been contacting their MPs for years now asking for a raise. So this establishment of a new committee does strike us as kind of a bit of an empty piece of political theater on Labor's part to continue kicking that can down the road, because they know it's a terrible look to keep starving welfare recipients during this cost of living crisis. So this committee does seem to us like a little bit of window dressing to try and take some political heat off themselves.
Peter Whiteford, what's your view? Is it just window dressing, given that there is existing data, or does this create an extra level of transparency and pressure?
It depends on what... I think we need to see the details of what the government's actually going to do. So it's a commitment, as Jeremy says, it's a commitment to a review, not a commitment to action. So I think that a commitment to action is obviously much more important, but we need to see the terms of reference of the committee and how they're going to operate and what's the nature of the reporting procedures to the government and to Parliament.
Yes, it's interesting to see ACOS say, look, this is going to create a clear pathway to securing adequate income support. But the political language coming from Labor has been very much about managing expectations, hasn't it? Peter, how much has welfare increased in real terms since the 90s?
Well, very little, basically, since the 90s. And it's primarily due to the fact that while pensions started to be indexed to earnings from 1997, unemployment payments and other payments for people of working age remained indexed to prices rather than earnings. Now, there have been a couple of increases. There was a when the GST was introduced, but this was pretty small in real terms, above inflation. And also the most recent increase that was introduced by the Morrison government in 2021. It's gone up by a couple of percent in real terms since the early 1990s. That's in stark contrast to what happened under previous Labor governments. So the Whitlam government increased it to 25% of average earnings. Literally the second thing that the Hawke government did when it was elected, after announcing who the ministers were, was that they increased unemployment payments as this literally the second thing the government did. And they had a long-term plan to get unemployment payments for a single person back to 25% of average earnings. And they nearly got there, but they did it in a long, slow process. But since then, it has, because it's only been increased a little bit above the rate of inflation, it's fallen relative to average earnings, it's fallen relative to the minimum wage, and it's fallen relative to most measures of poverty as well.
Well, and you were saying they were using this measure of 25% of average earnings, I think you said. Is there a problem with the way we set those rates in Australia compared to how they manage things overseas, for example? Are there other ways to work out what is a good figure for that welfare support payment?
It depends on the nature of the benefit system. So Australia and a couple of other countries like New Zealand and the United Kingdom differ from most other high-income countries. In other countries, unemployment benefits like age pensions and other payments are social insurance payments, so they're contributory. So people can make a separate contribution to a separate fund while they're working, and also so do their employers. And what that then does is you get a fixed percentage of your own previous earnings when you become unemployed. And in some places, this can be as high as 60%. In places like Denmark, in other countries, it's much lower. But we don't have a contributory system. We have a system that claims to be about alleviating poverty rather than replacing your previous earnings. So we have flat rate payments and they're paid for out of general taxation revenue. And so we see our system as being about alleviating poverty. It's just that it's become much less effective at alleviating poverty over time. But it's the difference in our payment levels is due to the different nature of these benefit systems the different principles they follow.
Why do you think it is that we have chosen to stick with that system, Peter, given that it sees so many people living below the poverty line? Is this an ideological move across both sides of politics over decades and decades, or is it a purely economic decision?
It's a complex interaction between history and, I imagine, people's political judgments on the short term. We introduced, the first social security payments in Australia were age pensions back at the beginning of the 20th century. And we decided to go down a different path than other high-income countries. So in Europe, in Germany and France in particular, they had these contributory systems starting up. In Australia, we didn't follow that contributory basis. We've nearly had social insurance systems twice, but due to historical accidents, they didn't happen. So it's just a continuation of the nature of our benefit system that was set up over 100 years ago. And when unemployment payments were introduced in the 1940s in Australia, they followed that previous pattern of we'll pay for it out of general taxation revenue rather than putting these separate contributions onto workers and their employees. So it's a long-term historical result of actually sort of a set of accidents. Mm. But I think it's also, there's a lot of stigma and prejudice that people attach to receipt of benefits. And perhaps the way we do our system actually makes that worse, because in other countries, because people have contributed to their benefits, they're much seen as a right rather than as something that the government, in its mercy, so to speak, grants to people.
Don't you run into problems sometimes, though, if you have fewer people of a working age and involved in the workforce, then you get fewer contributions to that, and that's something that's happening to a lot of societies around the world, getting an ageing population. Do you then risk not having enough self-contributions to fund people in older age?
Absolutely. In terms of population ageing, that's one of the big challenges, that and the related cost of paying for aged care, obviously. So some countries have insurance systems for that. But for the unemployed, it used to be back in the 1970s and when we had significant recessions in the 1980s and the early 1990s, there were a lot of concerns about incentives to work, that if payments were too generous, then people wouldn't take up job opportunities. But I think that the reality is that we're a long way away from that sort of world of the 1970s and 1980s and 1990s. And in particular, we now have we have a lot of, the labour market has changed pretty fundamentally. And there's a lot more part-time work. While casual work hasn't increased since the 1990s, it went up an awful lot in the 1990s. So we have a different pattern of work, and the assumption that people would just give up work to them on unemployment payments, it's pretty hard to see any validity in it. Say, for example, the if you're working full time at the minimum wage, you're probably taking home about currently about $720 a week, and you're getting well less than half of that on job seeker payment.
Yeah.
So there's very strong incentives to work in Australia.
We're speaking with Professor Peter Whiteford from the Crawford School of Public Policy at ANU and Jeremy Poxon, who's a spokesperson and board member of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. And our text messages are bearing out what Peter's been saying. I run a food pantry and we have consistent flows of people on the age pension, disability pension and job seeker come in for food. When we see any additional payments made to a particular welfare payment, that demographic come in less for less support for the following few weeks. People just want enough money for food, bills and rent. Raise the rate so people can afford to eat. The oldest person we have come in is 97. And another person wrote in too on that text line saying similar things. I volunteer with the Addie Road Food Pantry in Marrickville. We have more and more people coming in hungry and desperate. The police have started bringing in people as an alternative to arresting them for stealing food for their children. Raise the rate in capitals. Another Fiona in Melbourne says, I'm on the disability support pension. The base rate for a single adult is $936.80 per fortnight. That's less than $25,000 a year. A healthy person couldn't afford to live on that, let alone those of us who have much higher medical expenses. Jeremy Poxon, it was really interesting to see the different suggestions about where that rate should sit at. The Greens say it should be $88 a day. ACOS is suggesting $73 a day. Can you point to a number that's fair and reasonable and adequate to live on?
Yeah, so we believe the Henderson poverty line is the best measure of poverty in the country. So yeah, we and the Greens and a bunch of other groups now do support an immediate increase to $88 a day. One of the problems again of this committee and the fact that it is on top of the fact that it is non-binding is Australia still doesn't have an agreed to official national measure of the poverty line, which is a huge problem, especially as we're heading into another quote unquote official committee and official review. If there's no official standard measure of poverty before we enter into that's putting the cart before the horse a little bit, something we've tried to push this government and previous governments before it is to establish a national measure of poverty. We think the Henderson poverty line of $88 a day is the best measure that we currently have, and we continue to advocate for that to be used, because Australia, again, and Peter can speak to this, is sort of a bizarre country where we don't have an official measure of poverty. But as your callers and messages are telling you this morning, as we're hearing now, and as we're going into this Christmas period, so many people relying on charity and food banks just to survive. We know the situation is dire, but without committing to an official measure of poverty, this government and previous governments seem to be deliberately trying to keep their head in the sand about how bad the situation really is out there for people.
My 7-year-old last night, Jeremy, said, does it cost money to get a job? We were having a discussion about why people who are homeless might find it difficult to get into work. And I mean, it does, doesn't it? You've got to have some money behind you to be able to compete in the employment market. What are you hearing at the moment about people's ability to seek work on those level of payments?
Yeah, the simple answer is yeah, it does. It does cost money. Especially now, it costs money to put fuel in your car to get to work and to get to job interviews. We're hearing stories from people who basically retired. People on Job Seeker have basically retired their cars for the time being because it is too expensive to put fuel in it. It can be cripplingly expensive. When so much percentage of your income is basically just going to keep a roof over your head, to keep the lights on, and a lot of people on Job Seeker are struggling to do that. Even you can't afford afford, you know, you can't afford the work clothes, or you can't afford to access the medication that you need to keep yourself stable and healthy. When it's such like a struggle, and sadly for many a failing struggle, to basically have afford the bare necessities, how can we then expect people to be able to look for work? This is kind of the cruelty that's been baked into the system for a long time. There's this rhetoric from government that, you know, payments need to be kept low as some sort of encouraging measure for people to, you know, want to bounce off quote unquote welfare to get into work. But we're finding that the rate of payments is so low that it's actually stopping people from being able to enter work because they can barely survive.
Welfare as trampoline. Interesting idea. Lots of texts with a strong socialist vibe, I have to say. Tax the wealthy, cut the tax loopholes and make society a more equitable society, says Paul. Would a national base salary paid to all and offset for employers, meaning employers reduce the salary they pay, have an impact? That's an interesting idea, Peter. Whiteford, could you briefly comment on that one?
Well, it's an interesting concept. The it may be referring to the idea of universal basic income, which has been discussed a lot internationally, and there was a basic income conference, I think, in Brisbane a few months ago. It's a universal payment is relatively expensive. If you actually reduced, took it off people's wages, I think that would make it be pretty unpopular. And also it would involve a very large increase in tax take. I think what we need to think about is what's practical in the, this sounds like a bit like being a bit too gradualist, but there's a long way to go to get to the Henderson poverty line, which is sort of about $616 a week compared to about $330 a week for a single person on Newstart. So I think that we need to think about practical steps. I should say I actually think this is a good start, that making Parliament respond every year to the levels of payments makes them think about these things in ways that they may not have before. I agree that there have been plenty of parliamentary reviews. The Senate's done a lot of work in this area. But I think having it written into some form of legislation or some part of the budget process is potentially valuable for making it difficult for politicians to avoid discussing this issue. But I think that the political process is an incremental process, we should aim to make as much progress as possible. But there is a long way to go to make the system adequate.
A comment on the different way people do things in other countries has come in. The problem with contribution-based payments to eventual pension is that it doesn't support those who haven't worked, haven't been able to get work or maintain work. Interesting point there. Peter Whiteford, there was that golden era during the COVID lockdowns where the rate of job seeker, at least, was almost doubled. Was that cost sustainable? I mean, that was seeing people being able to go to the dentist and pay for school excursions for their kids for the first time in a long time. Could that be managed?
I think anything can be managed if you have the political will to do it and you're able to bring the population behind you. That was a very interesting period because there were a lot of studies that showed that it had a very significant impact on income poverty for 6 months, and also that had a very significant impact in terms of real outcomes for people. It moved us from being about the third lowest in the OECD to close to the OECD average for 6 months. Having said that, it is this thing about the OECD average reflects countries where people have been making these contributions. So the tax take is much higher. Despite what people think, some people think in Australia, we actually have a pretty low level of taxes compared to other high-income countries. And part of the reason for that is that we don't have these social security contributions. So, on average, for high-income countries, we're talking about 10% of GDP extra in taxes to make these contributions. So I think it's a big ask to do it in a short run, but I think we need to work out the stages of making progress and try and attempt to get significant progress every year.
Jeremy Poxon, very, very quickly, it's been argued that the way we approach welfare in Australia dehumanises people, and we've heard that view put forward today. Is it just about changing the rate that might change the way we see people on welfare?
Yeah, changing the rate is one part of the story. Obviously, lifting people's income, like we did during, you know, like Peter was talking about during that COVID period, which we could easily do again. The sky didn't fall in once we doubled the rate of job seeker, and people were telling us that yes, they felt human again. Like you said, they could go to the dentist, they could feed their kids reliably, all those sorts of things that people should be entitled to in a wealthy country like ours. But the other part of the story that isn't being talked about and we're trying to push as well is the other dehumanizing aspect for people on welfare, of course, is the system of mutual obligations that people being put through. So it is always worth keeping in mind in conversations like this, like people on job seeker aren't just being kept in dire poverty. They're also being forced to, in some cases, up to 50 hours a fortnight of free labor activities, like work for the dole, like Parents Next if you're a single parent. This again under, you know, a brutal ideology that nobody gets a free ride and people must work for their pittance.
Well, as always, you know, it's part of a much broader conversation, isn't it? Jeremy, thanks so much for bringing your views to the table here on Life Matters today, and Professor Peter Whiteford too. Great to have your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jeremy Poxon, spokesperson and board member at the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. Professor Peter Whiteford at the Crawford School of Public Policy.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.